Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Body Bags with Joseph Scott Morgan. Years ago, when I was working as an investigator, every death that occurred, I'd like to say that each death is unique, and they are. But when you're in the middle of conducting an investigation into an obvious homicide and a pattern begins to appear in other cases, there's this little thing that occurs in your brain. And I used to think that I would get distracted from other cases that did not have the same patterns, because you get, I don't know, it's almost like in a hyper state of awareness, I think. Because you see, investigators are no different than anybody else. You know, you begin to see the boogeyman everywhere you go. But the hard, cold reality is that the boogeyman does exist. And today, I want to speak to a particular case of a teen girl who died many, many years ago. But yet her death was shrouded in mystery for a long time. And I think that it's important that we discuss it, because she fell victim to a boogeyman. She fell victim to Gary Ridgway, otherwise known as a Green River Killer. I'm Joseph Scott Morgan, and this is Body Bags. I think that, Dave, you and I kind of came to maturity as young adults.
Okay, Joe, stop. Before you guys get worried that this is going to be some kind of Summer of 42 boys becoming men show, it's not. This show today is about Tammy Lyles, directly and indirectly. Tammy Lyles was only 16 years old when she was murdered by Gary Ridgway, known to many as the Green River Serial Killer. Gary Ridgway killed 49 women and girls. Tammy Lyles was just 16 when she met Gary Ridgway and he killed her. It took years for her to be identified, for her family to know for sure this was our Tammy. As a matter of fact, for years she was called Bones 20. But it took the people at Othram Labs and the work they do that goes beyond the pale. It just is fascinating, incredible work. And I think about every time they solve a case genetically using genetic genealogy, it's another family that now has peace and comfort. Joe and I both don't like to say closure, but peace and comfort, knowing that's the key. So I wanted to make sure y'all know that's what we're talking about today. Green River Serial Killer, Othram Labs, and 16-year-old Tammy Lyles. Now, Joe, let's go back to the summer of 42.
I'm speaking to myself. I can't speak to you. Your experiences.
We're the same. We are the same age and live parallel existences in our private lives before we ever met one another.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. It's weird how people get connected that way. Yeah. But we came of age, I think, at an interesting time, particularly from a crime history perspective, mm-hmm. because it seems as though that the world that we inhabited back then, serial killers were talked about. They seemed to be, I know that they talk about them now in the true crime world, but back then, I can reflect back and think about all of these serial perpetrators that were out there when I was a young guy. And They were. It seems like that they were everywhere.
Because of Ted Bundy, more than anything else, Ted Bundy, because he was that he was attractive. He had been big, and you know they talked about him being very big in Washington state politics. He really wasn't, but because his story was so remarkable, and Ann Rule writing the book "The Stranger Beside Me" actually illuminated this whole world of the good-looking guy that you would be happy for your daughter to date is actually killing women who look like his first real love. But then we had in the 70s, we had his escape from jail twice, if you remember. That was the two, you know, run Ted run kind of stuff, or run Bundy run, whatever it was. We had that all over the press. And then in the 80s, we had all of the other things. We had the Green River Killer in the news because they labeled it that way. But in the meantime, we had Ted Bundy reaching out to the press. Because he was on death row and they kept trying to kill him and he kept trying to fight it off. And so every time a serial killer started being covered in the press, Ted Bundy got his wheels in motion to get the press back on him. It was amazing.
Yeah, it really was.
In a bad way, amazing.
Yeah, yeah. No, really. In a reality, in a realistic way. Because I think that, you know, it goes to people throw around the term narcissism all the time nowadays. Right. It certainly, I think that it is very, it is symptomatic of narcissism relative to him. And he would draw the spotlight back to him. And I think back, we had Richard Ramirez.
Oh, wow.
We had the Hillside Stranglers. It's not Strangler. For a while it was singular, but then you've got this team of guys. And then going back even further than that, you had,
Tate LaBianca.
Tate LaBianca. But I was thinking about, he refused to be called Otis, but Otis Tool.
Oh.
And,
Henry, that was the one
Henry Lee Lucas, and they worked in tandem. And actually I didn't have direct contact with Otis, O-T-I-S. He preferred to be called by that, but Otis, Otis Tool, they worked in tandem. If you've ever seen Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer, very disturbing film. But that, you know, those two worked. And interestingly enough, when I was with a coroner in New Orleans, they brought Otis Tool to my jurisdiction. And one of the little traps that a lot of investigators would fall into back then was the fact that these guys would be cooling their heels in jail. I think Otis was in Florida Penitentiary at that point in time. And they brought him to New Orleans because he claimed that he could tell authorities where bodies were. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he kind of made the rounds relative to that. And with Ridgway, there's an element of that with Ridgway. Gary Ridgway, the Green River Killer, because he took the authorities out to a variety of sites, and he had a huge body count. I think that some people, you know, believe that that he was really responsible for far more than he had claimed, and I don't know if that goes to he's trying to. You know, bait the authorities with that, or if it's reality, you never can tell because it's such a deceptive game that they play. You know, but for me, what's really cool, Dave, is that I'm not going to say it was life changing, but I had a real peek behind the curtain a couple of weeks ago, and I got to go to Othram Labs, down in the Woodlands outside of Houston, Texas. And they have a direct bearing on the case we're going to talk about today, and the work that they're doing in forensic genetic genealogy. And so I think that it's important that we try to understand our victim today that we're going to talk about, Tammy Lyles. And she's what they believe is the youngest victim of the Green River Killer, and Othram played a big role in this, day.
You know, it's amazing that for those of us who watched the trial of the century, maybe one of the last trials of the century for the 1900s, was the O.J. Simpson trial, where we heard a lot about DNA for the first time for many of us as observers of crime-related stuff. That story was all about DNA, it seemed, at the end. And I think there's a whole lot more that could be told. But the bottom line here is that because of so many of us knowing about DNA because of the OJ trial and what has happened since then, I think it's important for you, for people to know that Othram, they're not some heavily funded government entity that's got a staff of, you know, with billions of dollars pouring in. It's amazing to me, and we'll cover this more of what they, but they actually have to crowdfund to do stories. Like, if you have a loved one that was murdered and you're trying to solve it, it's been years and years and years, and you know, there's no statute of limitations on murder, and the only evidence you have is this sample of DNA, and they've been able to do nothing with it, and it's 20 years later,
yeah.
Othram can do something with it. They can try.
Yeah, they can, and it kind of bifurcates in the sense of how it's utilized. I got to meet and spend time with David Middleman, who is the director and CEO, and his brilliant wife, Kristen Middleman. And they've run this thing and created something essentially from the ground up. And
wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Actually,
there's
going to have to be a movie on this, you know?
I think that it would be perfect, and they're fantastic. And David, if you ever enter, and I know that a lot of people maybe can state this, if you've never been around a true savant, somebody that if you're around them, their intellect seems to be off the scale, I'd say that David fits within that category. He is brilliant. But, you know, the thing about it is that his brilliance doesn't stifle his compassion. And it's one thing, you know, it's one thing to say, we can sit around all day long and say how compassionate we are.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you and I believe that your abilities are proven through your actions.
Yeah.
And, you know, put the words into motion, put those, you know, your, what otherwise would just be worthless platitudes.
Yeah.
His goal, which is fascinating to me, is not only to help solve crimes, which is part of it. That's why this is a bifurcated discussion, is to help solve crimes, to bring people, to hold people responsible for mm-hmm. these horrible things that they've done. But also the other part that he's engaged in is trying to get the thousands and thousands and thousands of bodies that are out there identified, and to help families know that have been missing loved ones, that there is always an empty chair at Christmas time or Thanksgiving or whatever holiday they celebrate. And you never know what had happened to those individuals. And, you know, Dave, I got to tell you, I was having a conversation with David Middleman, and we were standing out on this sun-drenched porch in the Texas heat. And he looked at me and he said, you know, my goal is to get the database for NamUs, which is the database for all of the unidentified bodies that we have that are out there. My goal, and should be the goal of everyone, to clear that database out and get everybody known to the world once again. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Years ago, when I got out of my field full time, I was diagnosed with PTSD. I had sleep disorder. I had depression. And for me, I had to turn to someone to talk to, somebody that could aid me along the path to healing, to restore me to that person that maybe I was at one point in time, to make me better for not just myself, but my family. If you're thinking about therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. You can do this anytime that you like. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/bags today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp.com. That's Better, H-E-L-P.com. /bags.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18+.
No, you're not an adult yet. But you know, sometimes, dependent upon the circumstances that a 16-year-old is in, they have to face horrors that you would think would otherwise only be reserved for adults. And of course, in the case that we're speaking of today with Tammy Lyles, she faced that horror. She faced this devil, this boogeyman in Gary Ridgway. And it's still amazing that, first off, that they were ever even able to get her identified, Dave.
The entire spectrum of the Green River Killer covers so many years, so much investigation, so much press. This was not something that was just discovered one day and they researched it back as a history lesson. This was ongoing in the moment coverage of what was happening with these women who were being killed. And Gary Ridgway, he was actually on the police radar early on, but just kept on trucking. They never had enough to really do anything with him, but he was somebody they considered up there. As we look at Tammy Lyles, when her bones were, I apologize, if you are one of Tammy's relatives or somebody that knew her as a living individual, this is no disrespect. But to be truthful, we have to describe what was found, when it was found, where it was found, how it was. And I'm so sorry if this was my loved one. I don't know how I would feel about this. But in this case, she was finally identified. She was not identified for a long time. And that's why I have a question for you about that, Joe, because they have labeled her as the Green River serial killer's final victim identified. 16-year-old Tammy Lyles. At the age of 16, she was murdered. Her remains were known as Bones 20. Didn't they have an identity? Didn't they know who she was before they used DNA to confirm what they thought?
Yeah, they had gotten an ID on her years after she had gone missing and her remains had been recovered.
Okay.
There was kind of a partial skeletal remain that was found of her, which is not uncommon.
Right.
You know, particularly when you have what are referred to as surface remains, those remains that are not buried, you're very fortunate. Very fortunate to find anything at all. In her case, they did. And I think that task was achieved through dental examination.
Okay. Because Tammy Lyles' body was found, her bones, called Bones 20. She had been last seen in downtown Seattle, Washington, June of 83. At the age of 16, she was one of two unidentified women whose remains were found near Tigard, Oregon, 1985. 2 years after she vanished from downtown Seattle, her remains found near Tigard, Oregon. She had been considered one of Ridgway's potential victims since way back, like 98. Or 88, rather. So she goes missing in 83. Her bones are recovered in 85. And by 88, they did consider her part of the Green River Killer victims. And that's why I was curious about the identification. It was an incomplete set of bones and teeth that were and if I get some of these confused too, and I am so sorry.
No,
but
it's okay.
You know, there was one of the stories that I remember, Joe, where they were at a ball field and a dog came running up to the coach who was working on the field and had a leg bone in his mouth. And can you imagine what that would be like?
Yeah. And for our listeners,
oh, Yeah. That's not Tammy, by the way. I apologize.
No, that's not Tammy. But when you have canines that are running a field, if you will, there are a number of cases, and for some reason, dogs are attracted to skulls as well. It's almost like they're, commonly you think about dogs having long bones, they're laying in the shade, maybe they're chewing on a long bone of some kind. Generally, you don't expect that to be a human bone, but I can think of two cases right off the top of my head where I had dogs that walked up in the yard of some unsuspecting person's home with a skull. And they treat them almost like balls many times, and they'll have them poised between their paws like this, and they'll be chewing and working on those bones the entire time. And canines seem to find great joy in doing this. And so it's not unusual for an animal to come walking up with a bone.
I could have answered the question for $1 million, I never would have guessed that a dog would be fascinated with the head. I never would have thought that.
It's like that. I think that it's, if anyone has ever seen a dog with a ball between their paws, kind of playing in the backyard with it, it's kind of like that, only they see it as a source of protein. That's just like we're no different. You know, our bodies are no different after death like that. That's one of the things that attracts. And so you never know. And here's the other thing is that if you have a skeletal remain, and the dog grabs a skeletal remain, brings in one element of it, you don't know where that originated from. And so with Gary Ridgway and all of these victims, including Tammy Lyles, he perpetrated these crimes so that he had these remains spread out. The distribution of the remains was all over King County. And so you didn't always know, he didn't have like a specific location he would go to, but he would do particular things with the bodies, some of them, that they could still appreciate. Sometimes he'd line bodies up. He'd go to these particular areas where he was just kind of keeping them. And so they've got these almost like commingled remains. They even put forth the idea that he's posing some of these bodies after death. And the fact that he would do this, and the other thing about Ridgway is that he's not one of these brilliant guys. He doesn't have like an IQ that's off the chart. He was just singularly focused on what he was doing. And he worked for years and years. And this plays into the story as well. He worked for years and years as not just a car painter or an automotive painter, but a painter of trucks, specifically like, big Peterbilts and Mack trucks. That's what he did. And he maintained that job all of these years while still going out and perpetrating these crimes, which is fascinating as far as I'm concerned. He was just singularly focused on this obsession that he had with killing prostitutes and then disregarding their remains.
It's still amazing to me that Gary Ridgway was a suspect early on from at least 87. And that's when we publicly knew about him in terms of the investigation, but they suspected him. As you mentioned, he was not as clever or as intelligent as some others that we have dealt with, but still he got away with it for a whole lot longer than many of them ever did. And the damage he did to families, I think of how one person can affect, one person's death affects so many people. Now you're talking 50, you're talking a lot of extended people directly and indirectly affected by what this one person did. And that's what I think is the most shocking, to talk about people in bones and things like that. When you had a girl that's 16 years old, his youngest victim was 14, or the youngest one we know about was 14, but still Tammy Lyles was 16 years old. Her bones helped identify who she was with as you mentioned, the teeth, using those as identity, but they weren't actually able to get the whole picture pulled together on Tammy Lyles until they were able to get the DNA tested. And when you start with so little evidence, Joe, and you don't have soft tissue. You don't have anything except the bones. What do you do as an investigator to try to find out who this person is and how they ended up where they are when they are discovered?
Yeah, well, that's a lot of that is going to rest heavily upon, first off, your first stop along the continuum here is anthropology. I would imagine that many of our friends have all heard of the Body Farm. That's one of the reasons the Body Farm does the research that they do, because you're dealing with decomposing skeletal remains, and you have to be able to, these people that go out and practice as anthropologists, they can't put most of the time a real fine point on identification. So they're looking in very broad ways at the bones that they have. You know, they'll try to categorize the bones by virtue of race. And that's, you really need a skull for that. And of course, in many of these cases, you're not going to have skull. And then you try to do stature. And there's a metric that you can apply relative to like bone length. Like if you're going to measure, say, the length of the thigh bone, it's going to fit into a particular category as to what the height, the approximating height of this individual will be. But then you have to determine if the thigh bone that you're looking at is either male or female, or is it from a racial grouping that would have more what are referred to, and this is a weird word, gracile bones, which gracile means fine, kind of fine featured, where if you had, say, an Asian person that you found, and it could be an adult male, their bones might not be as big and robust as some, you know, big European origin guy like me. And so you can't, sometimes you'll get the sexing of the bones, as they say, you'll get those confused. You'll get racial characteristics confused with skulls, because the facial characteristics, sometimes we're commingled. Our genetics are commingled now. It's not, you don't have these clear lines of delineation. So what are you left with at that point in time? Well, fortunately, the world that we live in today has brought about the idea of who are we? Who are we at our molecular core? And to our benefit, you have groups of people like Othram that are answering some of these long, long unanswered questions. Big question is, what are you left with? You know, you start off, I think, with an incomplete skeleton. And as horrible as it is, they're, the only name that you have is Bones 20. And you suspect that it could be one individual in particular, based upon dental ID. But you need to confirm that. You need to confirm that for the sake of the family. And you, like you said, Dave, you don't have soft tissue. So where are you going to go? Well, you're going to take bone sample. And in Tammy Lyle's case, that bone sample actually made it to Texas. But the first stop in Texas was not Othram Labs. It's another great lab that's housed at the University of North Texas. And as a matter of fact, I've got a real good buddy of mine that just retired from there. And they do some of the most marvelous work in DNA identification. But when they played that out to the end, they were left scratching their head thinking, we can't take this any further. We need to see who else we can source this to. And of course, that's when Othram appears on the radar, and they come in to kind of complete this job.
Now, when we're talking about Othram and beyond, because there is breaking down the DNA and having that map, but to find out who this person is and who they are tied to is a totally different, it's an extension of the DNA exercise, because now you've got to do the genetic genealogy. Yeah. You have to build a family tree. So here is our victim, and we've got the victim. Boy, we got everything right here, but we have to find out other thing. Who's related to this victim? There's other people, at least two.
Yeah, this is a fascinating thing in my recent visit to Othram that I was shocked by. You go into one section of this of their facility, which is amazing, and you've got this very clinical environment where everything is sealed off. People are on the literally on the other side of the glass and wearing protective clothing, right? And they can only work for about 45 minutes at a time when they have to step out because it's such labor intensive work, and you don't want your people to be distracted because of fatigue. So they have to take a break like every 45 minutes.
So but this is such a powerful thing on the brain. It is taxing your brain so much that they know after 45 minutes, you're no longer at the top of your game. It has eaten that much. Take a break. That's remarkable.
Yeah, it is. And it's the facility itself is really something to see from that perspective, but also that awareness. So if you have a case like Tammy's case that comes in and you're trying to adjust yourself to be so laser focused in your assessments of what you have before you, here's the really sad thing is that if this is a criminal case, defense attorneys will pick at that, how many other cases, if they're talking to the technician, how many other cases have you been working? How much time were you, do you think you were too tired to be doing this? And that sort of thing. They understand that concept. But here's the other part. They don't just have a scientific section, the genetic section. They've also got a genealogical section, which is when you begin to think about this in the world that I come from, which is, you know, morgues and crime labs and all that stuff, you don't think about, well, we've got a whole staff of genealogists here that they can confer with, and they begin to kind of work out this big puzzle about who is this individual. And right, you were, you know, when you were discussing how do you tie this back to a particular familial group, if you will. And that is, you look for these peripheral individuals that are out there within the family tree. So you're talking about cousins most of the time, and several times removed. And then they begin to kind of bring that in and tighten the focus on all of these cases. And Tammy, of course, is representative of that. And you want to be sure. You want to be sure about these cases. And so for Tammy Lyles, which, please keep in mind, if people are thinking, well, how did she die? There's no way to determine how many of these people die. Because when you get to the state where you're in a skeleton state, any of the soft tissue that you would be looking for focal areas of hemorrhage in the neck, or you're looking for, you know, the fractured hyoid, as they always talk about, or you're looking for trauma to the skull, many times you're not going to have that. And so it's an idea of essentially a presumptive event where you're presuming that this individual died at the hands of someone like Gary Ridgway, because it fit the MO of what he had done in the past, and she fits into a particular grouping. But Othram's role in this is, I think that it is first off, it's the ultimate in compassion, but also it is from this particular case and the series of homicides that Gary Ridgway was involved in. It is the ultimate act of compassion as well, because finally the family can move on from that point. I never use the word closure because I think that it's a horrible term to use, because families, you're diminishing the grief of families by saying that families never get closure from homicides. You can forget that. Please don't say that to people. I guess you have closure now. No, they don't. People don't get closure. It's such a weird term. And for those of us that work as death investigators, families don't get closure. They might achieve certain levels of peace. I don't know. I can't speak to anybody's individual experiences. But the one piece to this is that from a confirmatory stand, Othram offers that. And it's a little slice of peace, perhaps, for them. And that's what they've done in Tammy Lyle's case, Dave.
Well, you know, with Othram, and you have like math on one side and the theater arts people on the other, because to pull all this together, to actually get answers to questions and solving crimes, this is a really an amazing world of technology, because it does require some out of the box thinking besides the math. We have the math, but we've got to find the rest. And that's why Othram is so important to what's being done. And I want to go back to this idea that they are crowdfunded. When police send, you know, oftentimes our law enforcement agencies are underfunded, especially when it comes to investigations in what are considered cold cases. Now, because of the strides that have been made, many departments have a cold case unit, and they're breaking crimes. They're actually solving crimes that have been dormant for many, many years. But now you have the ability to take the technology and the skills and just the experience of investigators and actually solve these crimes. But to get to that next level, you need an Othram. You need a lab.
You do. Yeah.
And they don't have funding like I would think. You know, I just assumed until you told me, I really did assume that there was federal funding, that it came in from many different sources, and they just had, because of the work they are doing, that I really did think that it was super funded. Not a problem. Send it. We got you. You know, we're lined up from here to the moon, but it's not like that at all.
That's not the way it works. You know, and it's curious to me where certain government agencies push monies towards. Yeah. And I think that, you know, for me, of course, I'm partial in this area because it's death investigation. I think that one of the most noble things that you can do is provide a service like this to families. Othram fills that gap, you know, regarding this, regarding that big unknown, because they're the ultimate key. It's, you know, at a molecular level that they're offering. Look, there's been cold case squads for years and years, and it's frustrating being on a cold case. There's a reason they're cold cases. Mm-hmm. And you can, and cold cases that are part of a cold case packet. Let's see if I can explain this correctly. They are generational. So you can have an old group of investigators that will be on a cold case, one of many that might exist in a certain jurisdiction. And from a generational standpoint, and I'm talking generational in a very narrow spectrum here, it's passed on to the next generation of investigators that have achieved a level of skill, because the skills that a cold case investigator has are a bit different than your regular investigator that's out on the street. They're dealing with things that are a bit finer in detail. And so you have to raise up another generation of police officers to be at that level, or investigators to be at that level. And sometimes these cases just get handed off. That's what that, and I really want people to grab hold of this. That's why this is such a fantastic time to be alive in forensics, to witness this, because all of these cases, Dave, that for years and years and years that have gone unanswered, you know, the big questions that arise from these cases that have gone unanswered for years and years and years, we're finally getting to see a few beams of sunlight that are exposing this darkness, and there will finally be answers. And sometimes those answers will come about as an unidentified DNA sample that could be blood or semen or any number of body fluids that are found in a scene that can tie back to a perpetrator, or it can be one of the best gifts that anybody could give to one of these families that have wanted to know for so long what happened to those that I love, and striking them off of that master list that they have at NamUs. I urge you to check out DNASolves.com and just visit the website. I don't get a nickel off of this. I don't, you know, I'm not here to necessarily sell what Othram is doing. However, I've spent more time than I can possibly express to any of you guys standing over unidentified human remains for years and years and years with no answers. again, this might be one of the most noble things that's being done in the area of forensic sciences right now. And I urge each and every one of you to go and visit the website and see what these people are doing, because it will knock your socks off. I'm Joseph Scott Morgan, and this is Body Bags. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's a simple truth. No matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.